A loud bell, one that sounded so familiar, erupted nearby and jolted Neely back to the reality that he was trespassing 15 years after his time. He headed back through the atrium, only to be engulfed in the fury and throng of a late morning class change. The halls were alive with students pushing, yelling, slamming lockers, releasing the hormones and testosterone that had just been suppressed for the past 50 minutes. No one recognized Neely. A large, muscled player with a very thick neck almost bumped into him. He wore a green and white Spartan letterman's jacket, a status symbol with no equal in Messina. He had the customary strut of someone who owned the hall, which he did, if only briefly. He commanded respect. He expected to be admired. The girls smiled at him. The other boys gave him room. "Come back in a few years, big boy, and they will not know your name," Neely thought. "Your fabulous career will be a footnote. All the cute little girls will be mothers. The green jacket will still be a source of great personal pride, but you won't be able to wear it. High school stuff. Kid stuff." Why was it so important back then? Neely suddenly felt very old. He ducked through the crowd and left the school. Late in the afternoon, he drove slowly along a narrow gravel road that wrapped around Carr's Hill. When the shoulder widened, he pulled over and parked. Below him, an eighth of a mile away, was a Spartan field house, and in the distance to his right were the two practice fields, where the varsity was hitting in full pads on one, while a JV ran drills on the other. Coaches whistled and barked. On Rake Field, Rabbit rode a green and yellow John Deere mower back and forth across the pristine grass, something he did every day from March until December. The cheerleaders were on the track behind the home bench, painting signs for the war on Friday night, and occasionally practicing some new maneuvers. In the far end zone, the band was assembling itself for a quick rehearsal. Little had changed. Different coaches, different players, different cheerleaders, different kids in the band. But it was still the Spartans at Rakefield, with Rabbit on the mower, and everybody nervous about Friday. If Neely came back in 10 years and witnessed the same scene, he knew that the people in the place would look the same. Another year, another team, another season. It was hard to believe that Eddie Rake had been reduced to sitting very near where Neely was now sitting, and watching the game from so far away that he needed a radio to know what was happening. Did he cheer for the Spartans? Or did he secretly hope they lost every game, just for spite? Rake had a mean streak and could carry a grudge for years. Neely had never lost here. His freshman team went undefeated, which was, of course, expected in Messina. The freshmen played on Thursday nights and drew more fans than most varsities. The two games he lost as a starter were both in the state finals, both on the campus at A&M. His eighth grade team had tied Porterville at home, and that was as close as Neely had come to losing a football game in Messina. The tie had prompted Coach Rake to charge into their dressing room and deliver a harsh post-game lecture on the meaning of Spartan pride. After he terrorized a bunch of 13-year-olds, he replaced their coach. The stories kept coming back as Neely watched the practice field, having no desire to relive them. He left. A man delivering a fruit basket to the Rake home heard the whispers, and before long the entire town knew that the coach had drifted so far away he would never return. At dusk, the gossip reached the bleachers, where small groups of players from different teams and different decades had gathered to wait. A few sat alone, deep in their own memories of Rake and glory that had vanished so long ago. Paul Curry was back in jeans and a sweatshirt, and with two large pizzas Mona had made and sent so the boys could be boys for the night. Silo Mooney was there with a cooler of beer. Hubcap was missing, which was never a surprise. The Utley twins from out in the county had heard that Neely was back. 15 years earlier, they had been identical 160-pound linebackers, each of whom could tackle an oak tree. When it was dark, they watched as Rabbit made his trek to the scoreboard and flipped on the lights on the southwest pole. Rake was still alive, though barely. Long shadows fell across Rake Field, and the former players waited. The joggers were gone. The place was still. Laughter rose occasionally from one of the group scattered throughout the home bleachers as someone told an old football story. But for the most part, the voices were low. Rake was unconscious now. The end was near. Nat Sawyer found them. He had something in a large carrying case. "You got drugs there, Nat?" Silo asked. "Nope, cigars." Silo was the first to light up a Cuban, then Nat, then Paul, and finally Neely. The Utley twins neither drank nor smoked. "You'll never guess what I found," Nat said. "A girlfriend," Silo said. "Shut up, Silo." Nat opened the case and removed a large cassette tape player, a boombox. "Great, some jazz, just what I wanted," Silo said. Nat held up a cassette tape and announced, "This is Buck Coffey doing the 87 championship game." "No way," Paul said. "Yep. I listened to it last night, first time in years." "I've never heard it," Paul said. "I didn't know they recorded the game," Silo said. "A lot of things you don't know, Silo," Nat said. He put the tape in the slot and began fiddling with the dials. "If it's okay with you guys, I thought we'd just skip the first half." Even Neely managed to laugh. He had thrown 4 interceptions and fumbled once in the first half. The Spartans were down 31-0 to a wonderfully gifted team from East Pike. The tape began and the slow, raspy voice of Buck Coffey cut through the stillness of the bleachers.
Buck Coffey here at halftime, folks, on the campus of A&M in what was supposed to be an evenly matched game between 2 unbeaten teams. Not so. East Pike leads in every category except penalties and turnovers. The score's 31-0. I've been calling Messina Spartan games for the past 22 years, and I cannot remember being this far behind at halftime.